Welcome. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. It's The Money Show. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you got a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, this is the show that's been bringing you some answers to these financial situations for over 11 years. 504-260-0995. You can also give us a call or text from the front screen in the Winning It Live app. And you know what? We actually got a couple of emails on the show on Saturday, so maybe I should be mentioning that a little more often. We forget about the emails. This is such ancient technology in 2021, but info@gregoryricks.com. I know it's the 20s, but you can still email info@gregoryricks.com. Gary in Marrero, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Gary?
How you doing, Greg?
Hey, great.
You Gary? Yep, pretty good. Just wanted to give you a heads up on my online Social Security application experience. I talked to you a few weeks back, and you said you didn't, you know, think you had a problem with it, so I gave it a shot, and it was totally painless. You know, you go online, of course you got to set up your account. Once that's done, you know, you go online and just apply. You know, it's got a little prompt where to apply, and it walks you through it question by question. And then at the end, you do like an electronic signature, if I remember right, and that's it. And then you sit back and wait. And it says you can check the site back, you know, for updates periodically. But I did, and it never did. It shows the process of where you're at in the process. And basically somebody in Chicago looks at it, and 2 weeks later to the day they call me, and then they go over your application, the same one you filled out online, you know, make sure it's exactly the way it's supposed to be. And that's it. She tells you what you're going to get and when you're going to get it. And the lady was super nice. I mean, she gives you the Chicago line phone number plus her extension. So if you have a question, you can call her back directly, and you got to go through all the prompts. And then she asked me, if my wife was going to apply for mines, you know, on mines. And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, she is. She says, well, tell her to call this number, and, you know, she got a name on there. And, you know, my wife called, and she worked her right through the same thing, and no problems whatsoever. Now, I haven't received my check yet. That won't be till January, third week in January, in my first check. But other than that, it was pretty painless. Now, she did mention, she says you're going to have to go into the Social Security place like in Tarrytown. And she said, let me see if I can get you an appointment. And when she looked, it was booked solid. You couldn't even book anymore. She said, well, we'll just do it online and be done with it, you know. So that's kind of how that worked out.
Well, that is awesome. That sounds like some improved customer service there. I'm glad your experience went really, really well on that. And then giving you a number to call back.
Yeah, I mean, it was really flawless.
Well, that is a great report. I'm glad. It sounds like a kind of A-plus report there on the Social Security.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, online. I haven't received my first check yet, though, but she went over the numbers, and it was exactly, you had to give you a rough estimate online about approximately what you're going to get, you know. And once you put all the numbers in, I mean, she was pretty close to the penny with what it was.
Wow.
And then, so far, I'm tickled. Cause I've been down to Social Security 4 or 5 times already, and it ain't no picnic.
No. I think you went about it the best possible way with a great, great result.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it to anybody to go that route and try to go down there.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay.
You
know. Awesome. Thanks, Gary.
Usually at this point, we say you need to go get your online portal anyway and go ahead and explain why.
Well, I would rather you be signing up for your account than somebody else, but it's having access to like that he can go online and start his benefits when it's time to do so. And the customer service on the other end of that is really good. So they've obviously vastly improved that. And if you're not near Social Security eligibility age to turn on benefits, another reason for turning it on is having access to your report, your earnings benefits, what you're going to draw at FRA, having that information, but also where you can double check and make sure each year you're getting the proper credits applied to your benefit statement. So I think those are good things. How about this? Are you probably making at least one of these four retirement mistakes? No one's perfect, but two common retirement mistakes could be costly. This is John Sester article from Kiplinger I'm going to share with you right here. Now, there's plenty of ways for things to go awry. You know, I have a discussion. Sometimes, you know, you have one of those days or weeks like, yeah, something's always going awry. And some mistakes can prove especially costly, sapping your money along the way, taking the joy. Well, I don't know. Can it take the joy? Maybe, you know, dampening the joy during retirement. But those mistakes aren't inevitable. And with the right planning, you can improve your odds of avoiding the pitfalls. Let's explore four common mistakes people make with their retirements. Number one, deferring taxes. Sounds good in theory, doesn't it? Let's put off taxes. That's one of the great things about a tax deductible IRA or your traditional 401k is you can defer taxes on that portion of your income. In essence, Uncle Sam's helping you fund that because it's pre-tax money. But the short-term advantage comes with a long-term drawback. Those taxes eventually come due. And not only on the money you originally contributed, but also on all that interest you gained over decades. I kind of define it as a tax-infested account. Here's one way to look at it also. Heard story of a gentleman that passed not too long ago and left behind about $5 million in his 401k. And I was just kind of wondering on that story when I was thinking about discussing this article with you is if you build up a lot and you've got income increasing over time. And remember, where was most of this money built? On the back half of that working life. And early on, he might have been making money and putting it away at lower tax brackets. Now he's in a situation, in this example I'm giving you, he's taking taxes out at higher taxes in the future than what taxes he lower than the lower taxes he avoided by putting it in pre-tax back in the day. Just a thought there. So that's kind of one of the penalties potentially of deferring that. And that's why a Roth IRA or Roth 401k could be a better option for you. With a Roth, you don't get to defer taxes on your contribution, but your money grows tax-free.
All right, we'll continue with the list on you're probably making one of these four retirement mistakes after we talk to Timmy in Belle Chasse. Hey, Timmy, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Enjoying the show.
Awesome. Thanks,
Tim. Hey, I have a question about the Uniform Gift of Minors Act. I set up a mutual fund under the Uniform Gift of Minors Act for my son about 20 years ago, and obviously, he's no longer a minor, and it's just been rocking and rolling along. In fact, he's married now, and I was just wondering, am I setting him up to get him jammed up or something with taxes in the event when I eventually transfer this over to him?
Not necessarily. Taxes should have been paid along the way.
All along the way, right.
Yes, on that, but he's the only one that can do something with that account. Now,
right.
Because, heck, if he knew about the account, he could just call the firm and request the funds. It's simple from his standpoint. Another thing they've become more strict about, and this is actually when accounts that we handle for clients and accounts that they transfer over from other firms, because we do capture a lot of accounts that way, and UGMA will come over, and all of a sudden that child of theirs reaches age of majority, and guess what has to happen then? That account has to be retitled to the child.
Yes.
And there's some different situations have come up. Some, it's fine. It's like, oh, I'm not ready for them to have it. Well, they're having to come out and do paperwork on that. And some like, well, I wanted this a secret. Or we had one family, it's like, well, actually, I've already paid those tuition costs. That's my money. Well, you're going to have to work it out with your son in that case.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he's pretty comfortable with it. I don't think he doesn't know exactly what the value is, but he's got an idea. We talk about it every now and then. So, I mean, it's probably worth about $50,000, $52,000, something like that.
Wow.
But it's done pretty well over the years, just rock and roll along. But I was just concerned that once we transferred it over to him, and I don't have a problem with that, I just wanted to make sure he wasn't going to get smacked with anything, because we've been covering it, what the little taxes they were along the way. You know, it was more like a long-term growth type of fund.
Yeah, just depending on how that investment is, there might be some capital gains and such in there. But one thing I would reach out to is, I appreciate you calling us, but I'd speak to whoever you have handling your taxes, or do a little bit of research on that, just to have clarity of what's exposures there. But one thing about it, if he cashed it, and let's say there was a few grand in taxes due, well, you're leaving him $50,000. I think he's going to be good. Honestly, there.
I think you're right about that.
So once again, awesome job you did for your son there. Sure, he'll appreciate it.
Thanks for you.
Okay.
Thanks for your help.
All right. That's a great, great story. I'm going to talk about the taxes real quick here. Contributions to UGMA accounts are made with after-tax dollars. The donor doesn't receive an income deduction for making them. However, up to $15,000 per individual, $30,000 for married couple, can be contributed free of gift tax. Continuing on that, parents electing to pay their child's UGMA taxes will use IRS Form 8814. The form should be completed and attached to the IRS Form 1040 during tax filing. Failure to include this could result in penalties. So that's why I said he was probably kind of paid the taxes along the way. From a withdrawal standpoint, as far as taxes are concerned, there's no IRS penalty for withdrawing the money. However, any profits made in the UGMA or UTMA accounts are generally taxed at the child's usually lower tax rate rather than the parent's tax rate. Anything in excess of $2,100 though will be taxed at the parent's tax rate. So there's on this, him putting that money away and taxes being due as they went, we're somewhat efficient there. So I don't see much, if any, tax liability coming from that, from the growth standpoint of that. But once again, get with your tax professional. And this is a Uniform Gift to Minors Act. Is what that is. It's a structure where you can gift money to your child, and basically it's put in an account for them. When you set up this account and you put money in there, you are acting as the custodian of the account and safeguarding their money until they become the age of majority. It varies with state to state, whether it's 18 to 21, but once they become age of majority, they have legal access to that money. And I've seen situations in the past where, I really don't want them knowing about it. I don't think they would make good decisions with it. So you have those stories, and then the others is, I need to bring my kid in. They just turned 18. We need to get this into the account so they can decide what they want to do with it, or going to school and such. So it varies out there, and it's one way to do that. Roth IRAs are another way to put money if you're kind of saying, well, you know, I'd rather control all that. Well, your own Roth IRA can, and you're wanting to do this, a lot of times it's to pay for college tuition, school tuition and such. And your Roth IRA, you can use money in a Roth towards a student's tuition. So it's one way you keep control of that in so doing, because if it's not needed, it's still your money and growing for your future retirement. Another is 529 plans. And we covered this a while back. Did we turn that into podcast?
We did.
Yeah. I think that was an awesome piece we did a while back, talking about how 529 plans almost could be looked more at as an estate planning tool going forward. And it could be something that's set up, and depending on your ability, you can get a pretty big amount of money into these, and it can become a generational tool for helping future family members with schooling. So, I can tell you, years back, I wasn't as big a fan of it, but when you step back, climb out the box, start looking around, it gives you a lot of stuff to consider as well. And hey, you might could use all these. So
can you just scratch the surface if you're on the receiving end of one of those in your early 20s? Because that sounds like set up for a house, down payment on a house or paying off a student debt. But what does that look like from the angle of the kid?
Yeah, receiving a UGMA account, it's their money and their choices. I always kind of coach parents is, you know, if you're kind of university shopping and you wanted to go see the University of Hawaii, that could be a justified expense from that account. Well, we got to spend some of this money. They're going to need it for college. You can go college shopping. Just an example there. But they have, once they reach age of majority, it is their money. If you already paid for something, it might be, hey, you know, when you get access to this money, you know, remember, you owe me $5,000. You know, just if you have a good relationship, it's not going to be a problem. If you don't have a good relationship, then yeah, from that standpoint, it's a little bit problematic. But on an UGMA account, there's no rules. Once that child becomes age of majority, they don't have to use it for college or tuition. They could use it for the house, to start a business, or just continue letting it grow for the future. They also don't have to cash the account. It just has to be titled to their name. Once again, regarding UGMA accounts, depending on your objective, you know, once again, we talk about one of the problems with college education is debt. We need to minimize young adults' debt. But also on the other hand, I don't think 100% of young adults go to college. So once again, from a standpoint of an UGMA account, it gives you a lot more options there. You know, and I know you can't forecast that when they're 3 years old and you say, well, I'm going to start putting away some money for this, my little man or my little lady. And you can't, but you know, you just need to save. Whether it's using an UGMA, a 529, a Roth, or that savings account at the bank, or just getting started with a S&P 500 ETF or another indice, but save. First, I'll start with emergency savings, but save. And I don't want you to have a reason. You should just save. We don't need a reason to save. We're just going to need money in the future, and most of the time you're going to be glad you did if and when you need it. And retirement is a purpose, and maybe it can get contagious that then you want more. Let's pick up back where I was regarding Roth conversions. That's why a Roth IRA or Roth 401k could be a better option than your traditional IRA or 401k. With a Roth, you don't get to defer taxes on your contribution, but your money grows tax-free. You go ahead and pay the tax on the seed, and that way, when you harvest it, it comes out tax-free. You begin making withdrawals in retirement, you pay nothing. Over the long haul, this might very well be a much better deal. Unfortunately, not everybody has caught on to this. About 23% of taxpayers have a traditional IRA where taxes are deferred, and just 10% have a Roth IRA. This is according to the Urban Bookings Tax Policy Center. In addition to that, get this, the average balance in a traditional IRA is $168,000. While a Roth average is $41,000. Man, it should be more than that. If your money's in a traditional IRA, you may consider converting it to a Roth. You'll pay taxes when the conversion happens, but your money will grow tax-free. And you have to think of it, and I like to define it this way. We've got three tax worlds. If anything, you probably should have money in all three areas. Yeah, take advantage of some pre-tax putting money away. That helps maybe when you're younger, but at some point get that Roth going, because Roth is the second tax world. You pay the tax on it, but it's going to grow and come out tax-free. And then you have the other where you're paying taxes as you go. You might, it's an after-tax account or non-qualified account. back to the IRA traditional, the first tax world, yeah, you're putting it in pre-tax, but it's going to be taxed as ordinary income at some point in the future. And if you're having to pay taxes, then you're also taking larger distributions to get that money out. So one way to look at it is position yourself so as you're not paying full tax across all dollars. You're really taking money out. You're not much paying, not, you're not going to be paying much tax on your overall distributions. Another thing that's probably neglected is as the year draws to a close, and we're approaching that, we're inside of 2 months to the end of the year, it's important to set aside time to make sure you've considered any tax reduction opportunities and also make plans for the coming year. People think of April 15 as the tax deadline, but you probably have more value in this remaining time before December 31st, because most of the tax maneuvering you can do happens within the calendar year. One tactic for lowering your tax bill, and I kind of like this one, you may not have considered, is, get this, bunching. Have you been bunching lately? Bunching your itemized deduction. What does that mean? Many people no longer itemize deductions. That's because a standard deduction is higher than what their itemized deductions would total. But through bunching, you can bunch as many itemized deductions into a single year as possible. For example, if you make 2 years worth of charitable donations in 1 year, see that you can do two in 1 year. But you know, if that sounds difficult, think of it this way. You make a donation on January 1 and another on December 31st of the same year. Yeah, it's about a year apart, but you got them both in for the same year. You know, and that's where also I thought about here on this is if you're trying to shore up emergency funds and most of your money is in that traditional IRA or 401k, you're just like, yeah, I don't have any after-tax money. Well, some of that, it needs to be tax planning to get you shored up. That's where you kind of do at the end of the year a distribution and the beginning of the year a next. And that way you short up your funds in a short period of time. Another tactic is to, as the year winds down, is tax loss harvesting. This is when you can sell some investments at a loss to offset your gains you made with the sale of other investments. This lowers your overall net gain, reducing your tax bill. However, due to its complexity, this strategy is not for everyone, and you should definitely consult with your tax professional before considering. And finally, if you're 72 or older, make sure you've taken those required minimum distributions from your tax-deferred retirement accounts. Otherwise, you face hefty penalties. RMDs are another reason to consider a Roth conversion. And when you take that RMD distribution, it's got to be that check's got to be cashed in the calendar year. Another, number three, according to Fidelity Retiree Health Care Cost Estimate, an average retired couple age 65 in 2021 may need about $300,000 to cover health care expenses in retirement. Meanwhile, long-term care continues to be a major expense for many retirees. It's important to plan for those potentially significant expenses. One option to consider is Medicare Advantage plans, which may have a lower out-of-pocket cost than original Medicare and often offer benefits that original Medicare doesn't cover, such as vision, hearing, and dental. You'll want to compare what's best for you, of course. And number four, failing to plan how to fill your free time. I think something you should have is a plan for retirement. And no, not about your money, but what you're going to do. Even when people do a bang-up job planning their retirement-related money matters, they forget another critical component of a successful and happy retirement is what to do with all that spare time. At some point, endless rounds of golf or how many TV shows can you binge become redundant. So plan ahead for how you'll give some meaning to those later years. You could mean this could be volunteering, starting a side business, a side gig, traveling. Might want to do that earlier on. and developing new hobbies or taking on part-time work. Even if your primary working years are behind you, your life still needs purpose, and having purpose makes for a happier life. Traveling earlier on in retirement, you know, when you, some of these places you go, you know, it involves a lot of walking. Just think about that. You probably, you know, when you're like 90, want to do less walking, just saying.
A week from today is Gregory's next public event. It's going to be at Fleming Steakhouse in Metairie. The Wine, Wisdom, and Food Experience returns November 10th and November 11th. Sign up at gregoryricks.com or call the office directly, 504-832-9200. GregoryRicks.com or 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.